From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with a local and statewide news update. Polls opened Monday for early in-person voting, and at the Midtown Mall in Anchorage at noon, the line ran up one side of the mall and down the other.
This is a wonderful day. Look at the turnout. It's amazing.
Janice Buck has a sore foot. She came with a folding chair that she scooted ahead a few times a minute. Even after more than an hour of waiting, she was still agog at the sight of so many citizens coming together while staying 6 feet apart to cast ballots in person.
And it's warm and it's dry here. I mean, there's so many people standing out in the weather, and look at us.
Most voters said they wanted to vote early just to make sure they got it done. Some said they hoped it meant their ballots would be counted on November 3rd. The Division of Elections says early in-person ballots cast on or before October 29th will be counted on election night, with other ballots tallied a week later.
I hope it's possible that he can win Alaska. I believe it is. I believe a lot of people are looking for something new for the next 4 years.
That was Doris Hugo Shavings saying that she would vote for Biden. Not far from them stood a couple in Trump-Pence shirts. A poll worker asked them to cover them up when they got closer to the voting area. Mary Katas was in line, standing behind the wheelchair of her aunt, Judy Hansen, who is 79.
Rain, shine, doesn't matter. We always go and vote, whether it's local election, state, or, you know, nation. She always votes.
They normally live in Juneau, but Hansen is undergoing medical care in Anchorage. Even her compromised immune system didn't stop them. Hansen and Katas wore full face shields over their masks.
Okay, all right, let's get the melon in the box. And be sure and grab a sticker. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Early in-person voting is now open across the state. The Division of Elections website has the hours and locations. The state's Division of Elections reported that 3,726 votes were cast on Monday. Most of those votes are independents, followed by Democrats and then Republicans. The figure also includes voters in Juneau. Some reported waiting for about an hour to vote on Monday morning. You can keep up with the latest statewide election news and find answers to your questions on our elections page at ktoo.org. Earlier this month, Ricky Deesing of Juneau noticed two big campaign signs in front of his house had disappeared. He posted before and after photos on Facebook, thinking brazen thieves were responsible. They had to pull the stakes and unscrew them from some planter boxes in broad daylight along the state road. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports hundreds of people reacted and commented, including the culprits.
Ricky Deesing and his landlord, who put up the signs, declined to interview requests. But within an hour and a half of Deesing's post, the State Department of Transportation took responsibility. A spokesman wrote that the department was enforcing a state law that forbids posting most signs in its right-of-way along state roads. Right-of-way, in this context, is a little bit of real estate along state roads that DOT mostly controls, even though someone else probably owns the land, like Deesing's landlord. It's reserved for public uses, like sidewalks, power lines, drainage ditches, stop signs. Some commenters suggested the political signs, they were for independent candidates Elise Galvin for Congress and Al Gross for U.S. Senate, were pulled for political reasons.
No way. We're a completely equal opportunity.
That's Michael Schuler. He manages DOT's property in the region, which includes sign enforcement duties.
I mean, if right now, especially if there are signs that say, you know, welcome home, grandma from the hospital, you survived stage 4 cancer and it's on a mailbox, it's coming off. Because that's the law.
He shared photos of recently impounded signs. The names of local, state, and national candidates, including Republicans, Democrats, and independents, were all there. Schuler says patrolling for illegally posted signs is tedious, but necessary.
You know, if we just blew all this off, we would be in jeopardy of losing federal funding. And so it's kind of the lowest priority that I care to deal with. It's a bit of a time sink. But it's, you know, one of the requirements, so we do it.
This incident highlights the court system's 2018 interpretation of an old law that was aimed at forbidding billboards. Basically, before the 2018 decision, DOT was supposed to give 30 days written notice to the owners of most signs within 2 football fields of its right-of-way, then pull the signs, which Schuler says campaigns had been working around anyways.
Before 2018, most of the campaigns were pretty sharp in that they would put the big signs up 30 days before the election.
The judge's order made it okay to put up most temporary political signs on private property, regardless of the 2-football field rule. They just can't be in the state's right-of-way. The judge also said DOT could pull signs from the state right-of-way without notice. Schuler says that's cut down on paperwork. Another complaint on social media was that enforcement of the sign law seems inconsistent. Schuler says they can't be everywhere at all times, but thinks they are consistently enforcing the law. What's not consistent is where the state's right-of-way ends. Schuler says in a perfect world, the invisible lines would uniformly parallel the center of the road. But of course, the world's not perfect.
So there are lots of insteps and jogs out all over the place. There are very few places that we can just say, yeah, we've got 50 feet, you know, each side of center line all the way to the end of the road.
It can be tricky, even for him. He's a former survey crew chief who used to be on the ground mapping this stuff out.
It sometimes is confusing for me to figure out where the right-of-way is as it would be for, you know, a regular citizen trying to figure it out, because sometimes it's not always so straightforward.
He says he's happy to take calls to help people figure out where they can and can't put their signs. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Alaskans across the state woke up this morning to a strange, threatening email telling them how to vote in next month's presidential election.
It says, "We are in possession of all your information, email, address, telephone, everything. You are currently registered as a Democrat, and we know this because we have gained access into the entire voting infrastructure. You will vote for Trump on election day, or we will come after you."
That's Kane Stanton, an Anchorage hardware store manager who got one of the emails. Residents across the state posted screenshots of the emails they got early this morning in communities from Ketchikan to Petersburg to Bristol Bay. People in Florida say they got them too. Federal law bars voter intimidation, but state officials and the FBI would only say they were aware of the emails and they wouldn't release details about their response or speak to the seriousness of the threat. Stanton says he remains an undeterred anti-Trump voter, but he says he wanted to get people's attention because of others who might take the emails seriously.
Whether you do vote or you don't vote for Trump, that's not my point. My point is the fact that you're doing something because of this fear tactic of telling you what to do and what not to do. And that is not how I was raised. Like, I don't care your political party.
The source of the emails remains unknown. Some of them came from an address that suggests it's affiliated with the Proud Boys, a far-right group known for its violent demonstrations. But some of the group's leaders took to social media to vehemently deny that they were involved. Some Alaska Native groups say the U.S. government has ignored their requests to uphold national roadless rule restrictions in the Tongass National Forest. Coast Alaska reported the U.S. Forest Service recommended lifting the rule completely and is expected to make the decision official before the end of October. The agency started a 30-day clock last month to completely exempt Tongass National Forest from the 2001 regulation. The Forest Service consulted 9 Southeast Alaska tribes whose traditional homelands are part of the country's largest national forest. Huna Indian Association Administrator Bob Starbard says the change is a broken promise to tribal groups. And the National Tsunami Warning Center has lifted a tsunami advisory after a reported 7.5 magnitude earthquake off the Alaska Peninsula on Monday. A warning was issued by the National Tsunami Warning Center following an earthquake off Sand Point. The Alaska Earthquake Center said the quake was widely felt in communities along the southern coast, including Sand Point, Chignik, Unalaska, and the Kenai Peninsula. The Alaska Earthquake Center said a magnitude 5.2 aftershock was reported 11 minutes later, centered roughly in the same area. Public safety officials in King Cove had sent out an alert urging residents in the coastal area to move inland to higher ground. And personnel stationed at a military base in Alaska's largest city have been ordered to avoid bars and interior dining at restaurants amid rising coronavirus cases on and off the base. The Anchorage Daily News reported Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson placed the restrictions on airmen and soldiers in Anchorage. The order issued by Base Commander Colonel Kirsten Aguilar keeps active duty airmen assigned to the 673rd Wing from visiting bars, breweries, pubs, and nightclubs. The military says the restrictions were enacted as a precaution because of increasing COVID-19 cases statewide. This is KTOO News, and I'm Pablo Arauz Peña.